Now, I've said here that thus it is possible in 1992 we'll witness the fact that the fullness of the Gentiles will have come in and the blindness of Israel will start to be cured. Now, of course, as of now, this hasn't happened. The only difficulty that I have experienced with these dates is in the 1290-year section. It would seem to me that if the abomination that maketh desolate referred to Mohammedism, we should be able to find an Arab event in the year 657 corresponding to Pope Vitellianus that we were talking about. Now, the Muslims completed their conquest of Palestine in 640 A.D. The Mosque of Omar, or the Dome of the Rock, was completed in 691 A.D. Thus, 657 lies between these dates. And I haven't been able to see any Arab dates that had any great significance in this respect. On the other hand, from a spiritual standpoint, the Latin Church has been the greatest desolator of all. If we think about desolation in the terms of salvation and the hope of place in the kingdom of God, the Latin Church has done more damage to that than any other single force in the world. Our present position in history, unlike that of Dr. Thomas and Grattan Guinness, assures us that the 30 years and the 45-year periods must be added to 1917. See, they didn't know whether that 75-year period was within the 2,520 years or extended, added to it. Well, we have now lived to the point where it has to be added to it. Dr. Thomas died in 1871, 46 years before 1917. And we are now 75 years beyond 1917, or more than that. 1992, that is in the prophetical sense, is the last mathematical point in biblical prophecy at which we have any knowledge. I don't know of any mathematics in the scriptures which goes on beyond 1992 or 93 perhaps. It's a strange coincidence that from the death of Dr. Thomas until the beginning of 1992 is 120 years, which is the same length of time which elapsed between the time when God spoke to Noah and the occurrence of the flood. That may be an entire coincidence. There may be something to it. I don't know. If we assume that the return of our Lord is this year, which may be entirely wrong again, the question remains, what else must be accomplished as far as the Jews are concerned? Well, I hesitate to speak about prophecy after having been wrong numerous times. However, I suggest that being honestly wrong is not as serious a fault as not watching at all or not attempting to keep our lamps fully fueled in anticipation of the coming of the bridegroom. Therefore, in a plodding and mildly intrepid way, we will gaze again at the light of prophecy and suggest a possible pattern. Now, first of all, here are some current statistics drawn from the January the 4th, 1992 issue of the Jerusalem Post. The number of Soviet Jews coming to Israel since September of 1989, when the emigration wave started, is 328,187. The total number of Soviet Jews, remember we're talking about Soviet Jews now, the total number of Soviet Jews coming to Israel since 1948 is 501,644. The number of Jews still in the Soviet Union is about 3 million. Now that's only about 17% of Soviet Jews are in Israel at the present time. The current rate of emigration at the time that this report was made is about 8,000 per month. At this rate, it would take 31 years to bring 3 million Jews out of Russia. So it has to be pretty obvious that there has to be an accelerating factor here occur to bring all these Jews out. And of course, we believe that factor will be the Gogian invasion. According to Ezekiel 39, all the Jews in the world will be brought back to Israel after the Gogian invasion, at which time both Israel and the world will recognize the hand of God in human affairs. Well, based upon Ezekiel 38, the Gogian host will be made up of the former Soviet Union, France, Germany, Turkey, Persia, Ethiopia, Libya, and other unnamed nations, probably from Eastern Europe. The present economic state of Russia is such that she is not immediately capable of initiating an invasion, both from a standpoint of economy and a standpoint of organization, because these nations that we have named that are with her, it hasn't even dawned on them yet that such a coalition and invasion is to take place. Of the group of the nations mentioned, only Libya and Iran have expressed an open hostility to Israel. Now, we know that there are other nations that Syria, Jordan, have expressed open hostility, but they're not the ones named in the group of the Gogian invasion. It will take some time to organize all the nations involved to prepare for a proper invasion of the magnitude of Ezekiel 38. I submit, therefore, that barring surprise circumstances, and we have had surprise circumstances, and we probably will have again, that barring surprise circumstances, which, of course, are not impossible, it is not likely that the Gogian invasion will occur this year. If that is true, and based upon our assumption and hope of the return of Christ this year, the Gogian invasion, of course, cannot take place until after that. You know, I want to pause here for a second. There are certain events in our lives that we believe are going to happen, and in the back of our minds we say they're not going to happen. I can think of Catherine and I visiting my parents as they got older, and week after week we would visit there. And I would say to Catherine more than once, you know, the time is going to come when we won't be able to do this. And but in the back of your mind, you say, well, it really isn't. It'll go on and on. Well, the time does come. And with respect to the return of our Lord, all our lifetime we've been hoping for this event, and we've had reason to believe that it's just around the corner. And we haven't been wrong in our reasons. We have been accumulating reasons. And we have far more reasons now to believe in the return of Christ than ever before. But sometimes in the back of our mind, when Ted Evans says it's going to be this year, somebody says, I don't know, probably won't be this year. But it's going to be. It'll happen. And it'll be in the past before we know it. Another assumption that I should like to make, and that I'm satisfied is historically true, can be demonstrated, is the agreement with the thinking of Dr. Thomas that the prophecy of Daniel concerning the king of the north is but another view of the Gogian invasion of chapters 38, Ezekiel 38 and 39. I'm also satisfied that Balaam's prophecy of Numbers 24 and 24 and Jeremiah's prophecy of chapter 50 are also speaking about the Gogian invasion from a different angle. I'm very much aware of the vulnerability of the man or woman who ventures into the field of prophetic interpretation. Who could have dreamed that the iron-handed Soviet Union would disintegrate without war and without revolution in a matter of months? I shouldn't say no one could anticipate it. I did read the works of a brother at one time who said that the Soviet Union would dissolve. I don't know how he figured it out, but he was right, and it happened. Who would have conceived of the rise of Saddam Hussein, the powerful leader of Iraq? Who would have predicted the Gulf War, which has partially set the stage for the Gogian invasion? You know, we have the with respect to the Gogian invasion, we have the lion and the young lions and the merchants of Tarshish involved. Well, those whom we have prophetically and historically interpreted as the merchants of Tarshish, that is Britain and probably the United States, are now in Saudi Arabia and have military forces there. So there is nothing with respect to the Gogian invasion that says that the lion and the young lion and the merchants of Tarshish are able to do an awful lot about it, but they are going to be in a position to be able to ask the question, why art thou come, etc. I don't want to get into that just yet. There are presently in the armed forces of what used to be the Soviet Union 4 million men who at the present time are idle. This is a terrible problem for these nations. There are disputes going on as to how the armed forces should be divided up among the various nations of the old Union. And if and when they are divided up, no one knows what is to be done with them. If they are disbanded, there's no work for them in these countries, and this situation, therefore, has to be explosive. 3 years after the Gulf War, although Kuwait has been liberated and Baghdad devastated and the economy of Iraq in ruins, says Saddam Hussein is still in control, which is sort of rather remarkable. His elite armed forces are still preserved, and the development of nuclear weapons are still going on despite the efforts of the United Nations to inspect them and to stop the development. The perpetual hatred of the Arabs for Israel continues, and another war could break out at any time. These peace negotiations we know cannot come to anything significant in the sense of actually making peace. I think they may have to do with the time expressed by the Apostle Paul, I think, where he says that when they shall say peace and safety, which they're doing now, then sudden destruction cometh upon them. Surely the Middle East boiling pot of unrest and the wealth of oil available to an invading nation will eventually enter into the mind of Russia. Although the focus of Ezekiel 38 is upon Israel only, in all the other related prophecies, other nations as well are invaded. For instance, in Numbers 24 and 24, it says, "And ships shall come from the coast of Kittim." Now, Kittim is Cyprus and possibly includes the southern coast of Turkey. "Ships shall come from the coast of Kittim and shall afflict Asher and shall afflict Eber and he also shall perish forever. Now, Asher is present-day Iraq, and Eber, in my opinion, based on the archaeological work done in the city of Ebla, has to be Syria. So, according to Numbers 24 and 24, the ships from Kittim are going to come and invade Iraq and Syria. Jeremiah chapter 15, verse 1 states, the word of the Lord against Babylon, now present-day Babylon is Iraq, the word of the Lord against Babylon and against the land of the Chaldeans by Jeremiah the prophet. Now verse 3, for out of the north there cometh up a nation against her, which shall make her land desolate, and none shall dwell therein. They shall remove, they shall depart, both man and beast. Now this is not speaking about the conquest of Cyrus, because Cyrus was not a desolator. He didn't destroy Babylon. Babylon was never destroyed militarily. As has been pointed out to us already, much of Babylon was systematically carted off and built elsewhere, and the city fell into ruins. Even in the time of Alexander the Great, Alexander died in Nebuchadnezzar's palace in Babylon, so it was still there at that time. However, at the present time, it has just gone into ruins. Verse 4 is a key verse. In those days, and at that time, saith the Lord, the children of Israel shall come, they and the children of Judah together, going and weeping, they shall go and seek the Lord their God. They shall ask the way to Zion, with their faces thitherward, saying, come and let us join ourselves to the Lord in a perpetual covenant that shall not be forgotten. Now, this is the condition of Israel that has to prevail at the time when they shall be entirely gathered back to their own land. See, this is the condition that has to prevail before they can be entirely gathered back to their own land. They have to be seeking the Lord their God and his covenant.
What about Matthew, the 23rd chapter, that last verse? When Jesus said, you will not see me no more until you say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. Are you talking about that?
Same thing. Now with respect to Syria, we have the prophecy of Isaiah 17. It says, the burden of Damascus, behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap. The cities of Aroer are forsaken, they shall be for flocks which shall lie down, and none shall make them afraid. Well, Damascus is the world's oldest continuing city. Damascus has never been destroyed in world history. Therefore, if it is to be destroyed, this destruction is in the future. Who will destroy Damascus? Will it be the Gogian host or will it be Israel? The prophecy is not specific. In my opinion, at the present time, I think that Israel will be the nation that will destroy Damascus, which will occur as a result of another Arab-Israeli war, and this time with Syria. I had the opportunity in 1966 to visit Israel, and we were in Jerusalem, Jordan at the time, and we talked to a Roman Catholic nun that was there, and she said that Jordan would gladly make peace with Israel. He said, it's Syria that is the culprit. They are the ones that will not make peace. And I believe it's still so. Syria, for the last 20 or 30 years, has taught their students in the schools to hate Israel. Every Syrian youth has been brought up on a diet of hating Israel. verses 3 and 4 of Isaiah chapter 17 seems to suggest this. It says, "The fortress also shall cease from Ephraim, and the kingdom from Damascus, and the remnant of Syria, they shall be as the glory of the children of Israel, saith the Lord of hosts. And in that day it shall come to pass that the glory of Jacob shall be made thin, and the fatness of his flesh shall wax lean." And then in verse 7, "At that day shall a man look to his Maker, and his eyes shall have respect to the Holy One of Israel." And as Brother Dick has pointed out, that the chief focus of the Old Testament is talking about the Jews. So where it says, "And every man shall look to his Maker," no doubt is Israel will be those who will be looking to his Maker. And it will be as a result of this war. So it would indicate that although Israel will be successful in the against Syria, that she will probably suffer heavy losses on account of it. Now it appears from this prophecy that when Damascus is destroyed, as we said, Israel will also be weakened, and it will desire to return to the Lord. There are many little jewels of prophecy hidden here and there that indicates that under certain conditions Israel will return to the Lord. I therefore am of the opinion that another Arab-Israeli war, in which Iraq could very well be involved, will trigger and launch the Gogian invasion. But keep in mind, this all takes time. You can't have a Gogian invasion just like that. If the Lord is to return this year, that it is quite possible that we may see another Arab-Israeli war launched soon. In fact, I wondered that it hasn't happened already. We've seen three major Arab-Israeli wars, so this isn't something that we've never experienced. We also, for various reasons, feel that there will be an interval of time between the coming of our Lord and when he reveals himself to Israel, and the length of that period that no one knows. Well, I should like to bring this lecture to a close with a reading of the last three paragraphs of that article that I started to read yesterday, I guess it was, written by our late sister Sarah Ferrer in the 1969 Advocate. I think the attitude that she expresses here is a good attitude, and one to be recommended by for the benefit of us all. Sister Ferrer says, I would just like to emphasize that any sense of discouragement that might have been experienced when a notable time period expired without the Master's return was more than counterbalanced by the occurrence of a really notable sign that we could know for sure had been foretold in God's Word. It is as though we were traveling to a distant city, the way to which we did not know, only we had been given explicit written directions with clearly defined landmarks by one who did know the way. The road was long, with many twists and bends along the way. Each time we saw a landmark which had been accurately described, we felt certain our destination was just around the next bend. This happened many times, so our disappointment was great. Nevertheless, we could know for certain that the landmarks passed were unquestionably the ones described in our directions. In spite of our discouragement, In spite of our discouragement, we would not take heart, knowing we were really on the right road and ever drawing nearer to our destinations. I want to read that right again. Would we not take heart? In spite of our discouragement, would we not take heart, knowing we were really on the right road and ever drawing nearer to our destination, we would never conclude that it was all a hoax and turn aside into the woods and become lost. So it is with us. We know the landmarks have nearly all been passed, and very soon, just around the corner, the glorious vision will burst upon our sight, even the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory, as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, and every eye shall see him. I certainly recommend Sister Ferrer's attitude in that respect. During this week, Sister Esma Fitzgerald gave me an article taken out of an old Advocate which has to be written previous to 1897, and it's looks more like papyrus than paper. This article has to do with the Dreyfus case. Well, what does the Dreyfus case have to do with Christadelphians and Israel? Well, in the early, at least in the latter part of the last century, Alfred Dreyfus was an officer in the army of France, and he was Jewish. For some reason or other that probably is known that I don't know, Dreyfus was charged with treason, and he was sent to Devil's Island, I believe, for a while. Many people believe that the charge was simply anti-Semitic and trumped up. And the French author Émile Zola wrote a book on the subject, and the title was J'accuse, which means I accuse. And he was accusing, the French government of framing Dreyfus. This also moved, what's his name? Theodore. This also moved Theodore Herzl to feel that with the continuation of anti-Semitism in the world, that the only solution to the Jewish cause was to promote a homeland in Israel. As you probably know, other portions of the world were considered a possibility for a Jewish homeland, one of them being Uganda. But Herzl would have none of that. Israel was the only possible place. Now, in this scenario of Dreyfus, the article that Sister Fitzgerald gave me has to do with the influence of the Jewish bankers in the world at that time. And I'll read the article, and you can just see how this all works. It says, the story is that the power of the Jewish financiers, the story is that they brought about the Dreyfus rehearing. The crisis in France resulting from the revision of the Dreyfus case threatens the stability of the Republic, said Adolf Hern, a prominent capitalist of Hamburg, Germany, at the Palmer House yesterday. Now, I don't know whether that Palmer House was probably in the United States someplace. Mr. Hern continued, the secret history of this case shows that it was not through mere desire to do justice to an innocent man that the Court of Cassation was ordered to declare Dreyfus guiltless, and order the court martial at Rheims to give him another trial. But it was through fear that if this was not done, France would be bankrupt and a revolution would start from without Paris, which would overthrow all those who are or were in power. The condemnation of Dreyfus caused every Jew in continental Europe to feel that the act was a menace to his own personal safety. In Austria and Russia, there were many Jews in responsible government positions, and these officials took up the fight for Dreyfus. They decided finally that the only antidote was to take up the fight defiantly, and they had only to notify the leaders in the scheme of persecution that if Dreyfus did not get a fair play, the general scheme of persecution was attempted. All the great Jewish banking houses, the Rothschilds, the Goldsmiths, and the most powerful house in Europe next to the Rothschilds, the Afrusius in Russia, would simultaneously begin to lower the credit of France. Now, they weren't asking for Dreyfus to be let off. All they were asking for him is to give him a fair trial. When M. Lubet ascended to the presidency of France, the rents fell off. Now, I don't know what rents, whether that interest rate, Roger? I don't. It says it refers to the rents, R-E-N-T-E-S. When M. Lubet ascended to the presidency of France, the rents fell off. They dropped a trifle every day until the situation became serious. The Jews said the rents would continue to tumble until the country was smashed unless Dreyfus got justice. The government realized its helplessness. The Dreyfus hearing was ordered, and that very day the drop in the rent ceased. In London on March the 1st, the leading Israelites of Europe met. There were about a dozen in all, but they could control nearly 1 billion, or nearly all the ready cash in France, in 24 hours. At this conference, the future means necessary to secure the release and honorable reinstatement of Dreyfus in the French army were discussed. So you can see how the hand of God working through the nation of Israel and giving them the power to get wealth played a part in this reestablishment of the nation of Israel.
Well, that's the only way that God could let them survive, be in these economic positions. Otherwise, they'd have been annihilated years ago.
That's right. Now, this brings us to the end of our lecture. We have 10 minutes left. I said the last day that I would talk about the Gogian invasion, but I can't do an awful lot about it in 10 minutes. Are there any questions or comments with respect to what we've talked about this week? Right.
I'd like to know what your feeling is on Zechariah 13:8, the top two parts.
Catherine, would you bring my Bible up, please? I'm tied up here. Thank you.
I'm sorry, it said that it just may have already passed, but it still is in the future. And it also may not refer to specific people, but maybe the ideology.
Zechariah 13 and 8.
Right.
Where it says, and it shall come to pass, and that all the land, saith the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. And they shall call on my name, and I will hear them. And I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Lord is my God. There are two possible explanations of those verses that I know, and I don't know whether either one of them is right or not. It is known, as I mentioned a day or so ago, that two-thirds of the Jews of Europe were destroyed in the Holocaust. However, even though they were destroyed, they are not yet in the position to call upon the name of the Lord and say the Lord is my God. Now, this is, however, is also true in the case of Psalm number 83 that we read, where all nations compassed Israel about, and I think even Brother Dick also read the 83rd Psalm, where it indicates of the Arab attacks on Israel. And the last verse in the psalm, in essence, said that they might know that the hand of the Lord is there. Well, they still don't know that. So it's possible that an event can take place, and the desired result of that event might not immediately follow it. And it's possible that these two-thirds cut off could be the European Jews, which in due course will bring them to say, "The Lord is my God." Now, the other explanation that I have heard, Brother Ian Finley mentioned it to me, and he had been talking to a Jewish rabbi, and the opinion of the rabbi is that the expression shouldn't be two-thirds, not in the sense of 66%. It should be two parts, which allows those parts to vary in size. And he says that this refers to the Gaza Strip and the West Bank and another part. It just come to mind that these areas who are Arab will be cut off and die. Now, how that would bring Israel to say, "The Lord is my God," I'm not sure. I guess to a certain extent it might be able to, but actually personal persecution is more effective in that respect than simply the Lord doing them a favor, we might say. There is a possible third explanation, and that might have to do with what we read this morning concerning Isaiah chapter 17 and the destruction of Damascus and the flesh of Israel waxing lean. It might have to do with the great diminishing of the nation. I certainly would not want to say that was the case. It's just a possibility.
I've heard that there's been a survey in Israel, and that one-third of the population are indeed looking for the return of the Messiah, not the return of, or rather the coming of the Messiah. And what I was wondering if maybe this one-third that it talks about, which this translation, International Version, refers to as one-third, is not referring to the following chapter there, where, like in verse 2, it says, the rest of the people will not be taken from the city. And then it goes on in verse 5 to say, you will flee as you fled from the earthquake in the days of Uzziah the king. If that is the one-third that will be spared in the land as a result of what I think is the Gog invasion,
are they the ones that it will be said, "Let my outcast dwell with thee, Moab"? You know, where Dr. Thomas pointed this out, I believe, and I think it was Elpis Israel, that, and of course he thought, he expected Moab to be British influence, which it may or may not be.
Well, and also, you know, in that same chapter, the 13th, it talks about that, you know, he will show them the scars in his hands, and then he will identify himself, and they ask him, "Where did you get these scars?" He said, "In the house of my friends," and so on. That, to me, I can see where that's the one-third who are spared and who are allowed to see the Messiah and believe in him.
Well, There are many possibilities, too many for me to be specific about it. Any other thoughts? We have about 3 minutes.
We can say we enjoy.
Well, my wife Catherine and I can honestly say that we enjoy coming to the New Mexico Bible School. It has a different flavor than any other Bible school we have ever attended. I suppose, to some extent, I would have to admit that some of my interest in cowboys as a little boy hasn't diminished, and we enjoy the picnic that we had and the entertainment we were given, and we have certainly enjoyed the spiritual nature of all the brotherhood, their friendliness and kindness and consideration. So all in all, we are glad that we have been here, and if the Lord does not return until next year or some more later, we would certainly like to come back. So thank you very much.